partly cloudy skies at 77 degrees. Welcome to this Friday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. We'll begin with this. Yes, it's the Labor Day weekend, and many of y'all have travel plans, which include the world's busiest airport, Hartsfield-Jackson International. But there will be delays, if not cancellations, due to the catastrophic weather events caused by Tropical Storm Harvey. Joining me on the line now to talk all about this is Andrew Gobiel, spokesperson for Hartsfield-Jackson. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, Rose. Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing all right. Let's begin here. Of course, there are numerous airlines that fly out of the airport, but as of right now, do you know if there are flights able to make it into Houston or other areas heavily impacted by Harvey?
Yeah, the airports in Houston right now have not opened yet, but they are preparing, of course, for to be opened. It's a long process, especially in light of what has gone on over there. I mean, it's not like they can simply just, you know, turn on the lights and say, come on in, we're ready to go. I mean, they've got to prepare. They have to make sure that everything is taken care of. They inspect throughout the day. They're in touch with the FAA and the FAA inspectors. And it's not just that as well. What happens, of course, is that the airlines themselves have to pre-stage and they have to prepare. So they're going to reach out and they're going to make sure that their crews are ready, their personnel are ready, their equipment, including airplanes, are down there. So it is a long, involved process, but I can imagine that everyone out there is working as hard as they can to prepare for this. And, Rosa, I tell you, it's a small industry.
Mm-hmm.
We have friends and colleagues who are there. So, you know, we speak to them throughout the day and offer any support and any help that we can.
You know, the two main Houston airports is George Bush Intercontinental and then there's a William P. Hobby. That communication, you talked about your friends there and colleagues, you all have been reaching out to them. What's the communication been like with those Texas airports and you all just sort of wait and see because they have to get themselves together first before you all can even do anything.
Exactly. And as I said a moment ago, it's more on a personal level. You know, I was walking through, and some of my colleagues have actually worked in Houston before, and they'll reach out and they'll call, and inevitably it'll go right to voicemail because they're so busy down in Houston and in preparing. But we'll hear back from them, you know, and offer our well wishes and our support and do whatever needs to be done. And sometimes it's just kind of, you know, if they've got a few minutes and they want to talk to us, it's an ear to listen to, and it's the offer of support that we provide, hopefully, you know, in some small way, some comfort and support as they get ready to reopen.
Andrew, any idea when either of those airports will be able to get back to normal, so to speak?
Well, as far as getting back to normal, it may be a while, and you know, obviously I would never speak for my colleagues mm-hmm. in Houston, but we do hear that there is a possibility that one of the airports may be open within the next day or so. And it's a relatively slow ramp-up process. You know, there are a number of different plans that take place, and it takes a while, but we think that perhaps within 24 to 48 hours they should be very close to, if not opened already.
And even if someone wasn't flying directly into the Houston area or one of the other infected areas, they might have had a layover. Basically, you want to tell people just check with their airlines and find out what's happening.
That's what we do all the time. You know, and when we talk about, and one of the reasons why we're talking now is obviously the Labor Day weekend, we tell our passengers, we tell our guests to communicate with their airlines to find the latest information. So if you were planning on heading to the area or if you're waiting for someone to come back and you're interested, reach out to the airlines, give them a call, check their websites, check their social media feeds, and that's a great resource of information.
Andrew, this is a busy weekend normally anyway for Hartsfield-Jackson. Any idea how many travelers will come through this Labor Day weekend, and how's it looking so far?
A lot, Rose, a lot. We were expected to screen through the TSA security check upwards of 85,000 people today. That's not a record. We hit above 90,000 for our previous summer holidays, both Memorial Day in May and the 4th of July holidays, where we set records on those times. But those are just the screenings. Those are just the originating passengers who are coming through here. Remember, we deal with, on average, and we host, on average, between 260 and 280,000 passengers mm-hmm. every single day. So in the 4 or 5 day period between now and the middle of next week, you know, which is what we consider the Labor Day holiday, we expect to serve maybe 1.6, 1.7 million passengers.
And you will be on call all weekend, I take it, Andrew?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, absolutely.
Andrew Gobill, spokesperson for Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport right here in Atlanta, of course. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Rose. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. Simply put, there is no other convention like DragonCon. It was once the little convention that could, but DragonCon has become an international event. Now it combines everything from fandoms of genres of art, music, anime, literature, science fiction, fantasy, gaming, comics, superheroes, retail events. Somebody please stop me. How about I talk to Dan Carroll? He's the media relations director for DragonCon, and he helps lead a team of volunteers to coordinate media outreach and guest interviews. Dan, I think I see more of you during this weekend than I do of my entire family.
Well, I see more of you than my entire family that weekend also. DragonCon's an amazing event. We've got 82,000 people expected this year, and you could have just kept going on forever. One of the things that's hard about my position is trying to limit what I say about DragonCon, because if it's something you enjoy, something pop culture, we're going to have it represented at DragonCon.
You know, I've been covering DragonCon for a number of years now, spoken to you on a number of occasions. It never gets old for you, does it?
No, it's always fresh. And one of the things that I love about DragonCon personally is that it's family. It's an ever-growing family, but these are where we meet friends, we meet connections, and I'm very blessed that I get to work with some of the most amazing reporters in town, and but also that I get to talk about this great event and talk about the people who come and the sense of inclusion and welcome. One of the things I always like to throw back to is when I first started doing this, I was like, well, how do I get a good perspective on this thing that I've embraced? Mm-hmm. And I talked to APD officers, and the APD officers love DragonCon because they're people coming to have fun, and we're a good crowd. We tip well, I've heard, and we try to stay out of trouble.
We're going to get to the convention and talk about all the great stuff that's happening, but I want to go back to something you said in terms of the volunteers and the people who come every year to help, because they are volunteering. They're not getting paid, and they are coordinating forums, they're helping you get to where you need to get to. These are people who really care about this convention, and they come back every year.
Oh, yes, and that's what I talked about, that family aspect. We've got 2,200 to 2,500 volunteers. And to put it in perspective, we started out with 1,700 attendees.
1987.
So our volunteers are everything from the people who do tell you where the bathroom is and how to find the next panel and how to read the chart on your app so that you can find the right room. But we also have highly skilled professionals. We have our own, and this is all volunteer, we have our own TV network within mm-hmm. DragonCon called DCTV. We have lighting experts. We have sound experts, production experts that put on those amazing stage shows, and they are volunteers, just as I am. We have folks who are experts, and you talked about the panels, 3,500 hours of presentation. We've got 40 to 50 bands. I haven't counted how many we have exactly this year, but we've got music going 24 hours a day, and all the intricacies of what it takes to make sure a live stage show happens on a regular basis. Our volunteers are just amazing.
More goes into the DragonCon weekend than preparing for the Super Bowl or the Oscars. I mean, it's like the Super Bowl for three nights and the Oscars for three or four nights. It's a major, major events that are taking place all the time.
Wow. You put us in a very heady crowd. But I will say that DragonCon planning, people ask me if I plan all year, and I'm already 3 weeks into planning 2018. So it goes further. And one of the things that I love about DragonCon is just how important entertainment value is to the organization. And we're constantly looking for new ways to expand what we present and how we present it and make sure that the experience as we grow is scalable, but most importantly, that everybody feels they're having their own personal DragonCon.
And with that growing experience, you mentioned the app technology has become a big part of DragonCon, and people can also stream their DragonCon experience if they can't make it to all the events. So technology has become a big part of this convention for you all.
Sure, and our two big innovations this year are that you can stream DragonCon if you're not attending, and also we're looking at new markets, new interests, new fandoms, and we're going to be presenting esports for the first time ever.
Which is huge here in Atlanta.
Well, it's huge everywhere, yeah.
I went to the esports arena. It's like being on the set of a Battlestar Galactica. It's incredible.
Well, you know, I saw it and it looked like being at a Hawks game to me because you do have that sense of...
Yeah. It's an arena.
Yes, absolutely. And you do have that sense of it's a sporting event. And the young kids love it. And it's becoming more and more popular. And I think in the future, we're going to see this competing with professional sports in a lot of ways.
You all are heavily concentrated downtown. But as you just talked about, in the future, and it continues to grow, might we ever see DragonCon have to go out to other venues, other parts of the city? Is downtown Atlanta big enough to hold DragonCon?
Well, we have this discussion every year, and I can tell you this. We have plenty of room to grow in America's Mart. We have a lot of room to grow in America's Mart. And one of the things that DragonCon is different than other conventions, we are in the hotels. And that is part of our charm and part of our flavor. I often am with DragonCon attendees talking to reporters, and the attendees will say, well, if you want to see what DragonCon's really like, go to the Marriott at 2:30 a.m.
I have been there.
Actually, it's too crowded for my taste, but it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Let's talk this year and begin with the workshops, because here's what caught my interest, Dan. One was how to create voices for animation and video games. And then there was a workshop, how to write good genre TV for everybody. That is amazing. How do you all come up with these workshops? Is it by demand, or do people come to you and say, hey, I need a workshop on how to get into voiceover work?
Well, that's an interesting process. DragonCon is, in some ways, 35, 36 individual conventions. Each one of our track directors has a fair amount of autonomy in terms of how they do their programming. And they work with experts within their field, so that the Star Wars track director, Brandy Rotzi, is talking to Star Wars people all year round, both the fans and the creators. She works with the people who are behind the scenes at Lucasfilm, see what's going on. And the fan panels are influenced by both of those, both the fans and the people who want to come in.
How many tracks this year?
I think we have 35 official 35 fan tracks, and that's not counting our gaming and comic tracks.
And there's a new track called High Fantasy.
Oh, yes.
What's that about?
Really exciting. Well, for a long time, we had a Tolkien track, and we used to have a Wheel of Time track. Wheel of Time is a popular property of Robert Jordan, and Tolkien wrote Lord of the Rings, for those who do not know. And what we looked for was, what's the commonality? And the commonality is that these are epic, epic fantasies. And the other thing that needed a home, its own kind of focused home, was Game of Thrones.
Oh my goodness, Dan, let me stop you right there, because Closer Look producers Ebony Lemon and Finley Foxen are absolutely huge fans. I myself, I've never seen one episode. I know there are dragons in there somewhere, but I take it that this track is going to be very popular.
It's going to be very popular because it includes those works, plus it includes the works of people like Terry Brooks from Shannara, which is now a show on TV. And also Patrick Rothfuss' books are very popular, some of the best written books in the past 15 years. And there's a resurgence and love of this genre, primarily driven by Game of Thrones, which is amazing. And I watch every episode more than once.
Wow. And there's some sad news. DragonCon had to say goodbye to Whedonverse.
We did, but it's not a sad.
And
sad
that's for fans of
because,
Joss Whedon, correct?
Right. What we've made a decision that, for better or for worse, and not everybody agrees, but we've made the decision that we are going to do genre-driven tracks rather than creator-driven tracks. In the past, we've had the works of Amna Caffrey represented. Mm-hmm. I already mentioned we used to have a track just for Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great advantages of putting things together in these genre tracks is that you can have comparative panels. You can have panels that compare the works of Joss Whedon and Buffy to the works of James Cameron in Terminator.
Where and it you seems a little more inclusive then, right?
It does. It does. And, you know, Joss is obviously working very hard with the Justice League movie right now. Mm-hmm. And we think that all the things that people liked the most will definitely be preserved. An example is the parties. The evening at Brie will continue. The Avengers party will continue. And it's just a question of where we locate things and how we manage our time and our space.
There's also an official charity that benefits, and that is Special Olympics Georgia. How
it
did
is.
All this come about?
Well, we have long been a giving organization. The folks at the very top are incredibly generous with their time and their money, and that reflects in the rest of DragonCon. We started charity, I guess, about 10, 12 years ago, and we rotate every year. One year we had three charities, mm-hmm. and last year we raised about $110,000 for the American Center for Self-Sufficiency, Atlanta Center for Self-Sufficiency, and they help homeless people get back in the mainstream. Well, this year we went with the Special Olympics, and we have another program called the DragonCon Superheroes. And throughout the year, we go out, and I've been part of this myself. We go out and we help around the city. We replant the wood chips mm-hmm. at the dog park in Piedmont Park. We clean up lakes and streams, and we helped give out water at the Special Olympics this year. So it's a lot of fun. We help with the Lupus Walk every mm-hmm. year. Just different things we do with the superheroes, but DragonCon wanted to give more. Mm-hmm. And last year we had a matching donation. So for every dollar raised by our DragonCon attendees and our charity auction and other events, we matched it with a $1 matching fee up to $50,000.
Wow.
This year, we're going full bore with a $100,000 matching fee, and we're hoping to raise a record amount. But the other thing is that we have a blood drive.
I was just about to ask you that. See, right here on the script, it said, and there's a blood drive.
And there's a blood drive. And there's a blood drive? Question mark. There's an ellipse in there, too. So the blood drive this year hits a milestone. We're hitting 25,000 units of blood collected.
Wow.
And we anticipate that we will hit that mark mid-morning, lunchtime on Friday. And LifeSouth, our partner in this, is very excited. And they're going to be giving an award to the 25,000. I don't think I've ever used that as an adjective before.
Since the last DragonCon, some popular notables have passed. TV's first Batman, Adam West, Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, also a huge favorite. And during the annual media reception, he owned the pool table. So
he did indeed.
Those two will be missed. But also, given the success of Wonder Woman now, you're going to have a lot of new, I won't say new fans, but I think you're going to see a lot of Wonder Women around this time because of the success of the film this summer. It was a smash at the box office.
First off, I will give you my review. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a wonderful film. I think we're going to see a lot of Wonder Woman of all types. One of the things that I love about DragonCon cosplayers is the way they mix up their costumes. They'll have pin-up Wonder Woman. One of my favorite costumes of all time was a 1940s retro Wonder Woman. Just fantastic.
That's with the longer skirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the colors are subdued to represent a print of a comic mm-hmm. book that had faded over 60, 70 years.
You know, you mentioned the cosplays and the outfits, and this is where it gets fun because these are amazing and elaborate costumes. When I talk to people about first of all, planning their outfit or costume is a year in advance for some of them. It's fitted, and they want to be exact to get down to the detail of these costumes, where it's a superhero or a hobbit. I mean,
I currently share a house with a costumer, and I have watched this firsthand. They put out their effort, they do their plans, they break out their sewing machines, they rip everything apart and start over from scratch, and invariably the big joke on the Twitter and Facebook this week has been everybody deciding they're going to add one more costume on Monday night before Dragon Con. That, I think that says so much about the city of Atlanta. I believe, and I have always believed, that this is a city where people do things, whether it's Alta Tennis or anything else is going on. People get involved, and this is it. People go full bore. But I should also point out that Mayor Kasim Reed last year gave that as kind of a tie-in to the growth of the film industry in Atlanta, because they didn't have to go looking for people who knew how to make a costume on the fly. They didn't have to go looking for people who knew how to do monster makeup or any other type of professional makeup.
It's all right.
We had them. And there's no doubt that Atlanta is, within this costuming world, the epicenter, with great costumers like Riddle and Yaya Han, and so many others.
As we wrap up, Dan, let's talk about safety measures. What do you all have in place for anyone who's attending this year?
Well, this is an important topic. There's no doubt about it. And it's something that we take very, very seriously. We work throughout the year with the APD, the hotels, and this year more than ever, mm-hmm. To make sure that Dragon Con is not just the most inclusive event and not just the most fun event, but it's also the safest. And I can't go into details, obviously, but I can tell you that this is not something we're taking lightly, and we're making sure we get things underway so that you can come and enjoy yourself.
Atlanta and Dragon Con simply go together. Do you know if other cities, and you don't have to mention them if you don't want to, but do you know if other cities have tried to lure you all away?
No, and even if they did, it wouldn't work, because the success of Dragon Con is the fact that it was founded by Atlantans for Atlanta. And one of the things that I love is when I talk to people from the Northeast who come into the city, or when I talk to people who come into Dragon Con from California, they always talk about how they are treated. And you couldn't do it without the Southern hospitality. And I don't know if there's any place else that's going to have 4 or 5-star hotels in a row with this type of Southern hospitality and charm and the willingness of the volunteers to put together the best show ever, every year.
And it's a huge economic boost to the city over the Labor Day weekend. There's a lot going on. I ask this question every year. You all never tell me, but I'm going to ask again. How much money y'all bring in?
Well, I can tell you that the economic impact 2 years ago was about $72 million. In terms of the other stuff, I'm a word guy, Rose. I don't have numbers. If I had that, I'd be an accountant and you wouldn't know me.
Dan Carroll, Media Relations Director for Dragon Con, as usual. Thanks so much for stopping by. How much sleep will you get?
I will get more than expected. I'm giving up my partying this year because I really want to sleep.
Dan, thank you so much as always.
Thank you, Rose.
Support for WABE comes from Reliable Heating and Air, a Train dealer, a family company since 1978, offering heating and air, plumbing, electrical, and duct cleaning 24 hours a day. Learn more at ReliableAir.com. And from the High Museum of Art. Only weeks left to see prints by iconic pop artist Andy Warhol. Over 250 works on display, including Marilyn Monroe, Jacqueline Kennedy, and Campbell soup cans. Tickets at High.org.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. If there's one thing I've learned throughout the years covering Dragon Con, it's this. Be prepared to hear conversations about themes in every genre and subgenre. And for the sake of this next segment, science fiction literature, fantasy literature, high fantasy literature. Don't ask me to explain those last two because I don't know. But if you happen upon a hearty debate about religious themes and you choose to participate, be prepared for a long discussion. We're going to explore religious themes in science fiction and fantasy, and my guess may be a little bit of a surprise to you, the listeners. Usually when PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and Clarkston Mayor Ted Terry are in studio, the focus is about politics, Plant Vogel, the environment, or electric cars. Well, today they're going to step out of those elected roles as we talk religious themes in science fiction and fantasy. And also, Annie Echols joins us as well, Tim Echols' daughter. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's begin here. I'm going to ask each of you, why do you think there are so many religious themes and motifs in science fiction and fantasy literature? Mayor Terry, I'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. I think, I think you could probably argue that the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita were the original fantasy novels, before we had a
there
lot.
There you go.
And so it's not surprising that, 100 years ago when, these novels were sort of being created, and, I'm a fan of Tolkien, of course, mm-hmm. He obviously, was a Christian, that's what, they were coming from. And so, they wrote about what they knew. And I think, also just from an environmental perspective, it's clear Tolkien, had sort of an environmental.
You just had to make that connection.
love of the earth is very religious, Rose.
Commissioner Eckert, what about you? Why are there so many themes?
Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, they were contemporaries. They were at Oxford teaching mm-hmm. together, and they had this little reading and writing society called Inklings that met in a pub, the Eagle and Child pub. And I think there was more of a Christian worldview in society back then. We've kind of moved a little bit away from that in the UK, in Western Europe in particular, and I think we're moving a little further away in the U.S., unfortunately, I would say, because I am an evangelical Christian, and I still believe all the things that they wrote. So, I think this was a way for them to express themselves and to entertain their audience, to weave in a worldview message into something that was really fun to read.
Hey, Annie, what about you? Because you brought a book in today.
Yes, ma'am. I believe they show those themes in the books because there's a greater power than our own, and as Tolkien said, increasing according to our capacity, our knowledge of God by all the means we have, and to be moved by it and to praise and thanks, because that is our purpose. And I do believe he underlined those themes to shed light on the topic of everyone to show us our purpose.
Well, let me stay with you for a minute then, Annie. Is that what captivates you because of your own personal religious or spiritual beliefs? Does that connect you when it comes to certain literature, whether it's fantasy or science fiction?
Yes, ma'am, because I'm a strong believer in Jesus Christ, and I connect very well with Tolkien and Lewis.
What about you, Tim?
Yeah, Lewis was, an atheist before mm-hmm. he started hanging around with Tolkien. And so Tolkien was Catholic. And Lewis kind of surpassed Tolkien eventually in his evangelistic fervor. Lewis wrote Mere Christianity, mm-hmm. A number of kind of apologetic literature that defended the Christian faith. In fact, he wanted Tolkien to be more aggressive. Tolkien, in the Tolkien literature, you don't see churches, priests, themes, offerings, religion. They're mm-hmm. not there because he's kind of cloaked them, where Lewis gets out there even with allegory. And, you think about, the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, and you think about Aslan being Jesus sacrificed on the altar, and Tolkien doesn't go that mm-hmm. far.
Mayor Terry, what about you? Does your own personal spiritual beliefs, do they connect you to these writings? Are you just a fan?
Of course. Well, I grew up a Methodist, and I discovered Tolkien in college, and it actually shaped my view of the world, the environment. But just maybe more specifically, an example, the Fellowship of the Ring is bringing together all of these, ethnicities, all these different groups of people who you think would be, fighting against each other, but they're coming together for a larger purpose to, save the world. To me, that's compassion. That is sort of imbued upon all major religions, that we should have, mutual respect for each other, and that we can come together to, fight against something that is a much larger threat to our survival.
Minister Echols, I want to ask you this because I came across a forum in doing some research for this, and it was the question was posed, should Christians write fantasy? And the answers varied. And as I read some of the comments, it included people saying, as Christians, they identified as Christians, they felt conflicted because of, Christians are not supposed to, idolize any other gods and not to be involved in anything that might deal with witchcraft or sorcery. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, there is a difference between a Harry Potter type of fantasy and Tolkien. There is a difference, so we don't have to go into that. But I remember when the Harry Potter series came out, and evangelical Christians kind of pushed back against that.
They wanted Harry Potter.
No, they didn't like it.
But there was a lot of groups that wanted Harry Potter taken out of the schools.
Yeah, they really pushed back against it because it was more warlock-centered. It was more occult-centered as opposed to what they saw with The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit
and that
literature.
Because at the end of the day, and Annie, I'll ask you, someone would say, well, look, it's all make-believe anyway.
You know, Annie likes both. The Lord of the Rings versus Harry Potter.
Is it fair to say that, Harry Potter is this and then Tolkien is that, but at the end of the day?
Honestly, it's all about your perspective. If you go into reading Harry Potter thinking, if you let your little child read the book and they start wanting to cast spells or want to fly on a broom or do any of that, I think there is a problem in waiting till their mind is mature enough to realize this is not the reality. But when you read Tolkien, he gives you that perspective. And I do believe it's important with your perspective.
But there are no hobbits down the street. So, I mean, one could argue, Mayor Terry.
I believe J.K.K. Rowling was a student of Tolkien,
mm-hmm.
And was influenced by him. I see a lot of, similarities and parallels in the overall principles and the message that's there. And, you could argue about sort of the warlocks or the demons, but, I don't know. I feel like there's a sort of a common theme of togetherness and respect.
I think the way that we express our faith, right? Mm-hmm. Tolkien and Lewis, a case in point, they were different. Me as a politician, I often tell people, look, I'm an evangelical, and if voters don't like me, integrating my faith into how I do energy policy and other things, they'll send me home.
Mm-hmm.
I'll eventually be out of a job. But we all bring our own worldview and our own perspective to bear. And I think it is incumbent upon all of us to show respect and deference, to others, while at the same time being true, mm-hmm. To what we believe. And I think Tolkien was true to what he believed, and he went as far as he felt that he could, with his themes.
Often there is the battle between good versus evil, and sometimes there's a central figure that could be like a supreme being type. And Annie, you talked about it for a little kid, these images shaping their mind so young. But clearly, in Lord of the Rings, there is a good versus evil battle. And if it's not a central god, there are definitely, one could argue, the use of gods, plural. Like there are people out there to help Frodo and all those folks along the way that were higher beings.
No, you're right. There is this overarching theme that God has a plan for us and that he, through his guiding hand, is directing. I'm talking in the Tolkien literature mm-hmm. here. That is, one of the major themes. It's the essence, I think, of the material, and you'll see him use words like coincidence and luck, as you go through, you go, wait a second, there can't be this much luck. For example, the way that Bilbo found the ring, mm-hmm. crawling along in the dark under Misty Mountain and then laying his hand on this ring that changed everything, there's no way that could be luck, right?
Let's get to this because I want to get to this before we wrap. But because you are the minister that will be at the Dragon Con Chapel this year,
yes.
What
mm-hmm.
does that mean? Are you going to marry hobbits and stormtroopers?
Yeah, we're going to talk about we're not going to really get into stormtroopers. We're just going to focus on Tolkien and the Christian view or the Christian worldview in Middle Earth and kind of bring in some themes, like I mentioned, that God has a plan for us and and looking at the divine hand. And we're just going to look at some of these major themes, and then I'm going to tie it back to the Bible.
Are you going to, you brought in a cloak because you tried to get me to wear this hobbit cloak. Are you going to wear that?
During the message, I will have my cloak on. So we'll have fun with that. But everybody's going to be in costume
there.
Don't
forget your sword.
And don't forget my sword. Thank you, Annie. She has her sword today in studio.
And Annie, your outfit, you are a...
I'm not anyone in particular. I'm just someone from Lord of the Rings. My costume is not that specific.
Yeah. How much fun is Dragon Con for you all? I mean, you, Mayor Terry, you sent me a text saying, I'm a geek. That's what you said. I don't like to call people the G word, but you all enjoy all of this, the tracks, the different, just the family atmosphere that Dan Carroll talked about.
Yeah, Dan talked about the tracks, and it is fascinating, really, looking at the academic side of this. And these tracks go into great detail.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tracks last year, I think, was Klingon karaoke. One of them was Hobbit drinking songs. I mean, where they go in and look in detail, they read this literature. And remember, this is what Tolkien and Lewis did. They would read things together. And I think in our society, we've kind of gotten away from that. I was an English major undergrad, studied Shakespeare, studied literature. I love literature. I write a lot of op-eds. And I think we've gotten away from, you know, the value of reading and the value of literature in general.
Are you prepared for a little bit of pushback with your talk, your form? And I'm going to ask you now to put on your Commissioner Echols hat. Are you prepared to be balanced and open to different views, Commissioner, Minister Echols?
Well, you know, I'm always open to hearing from my constituents, regardless regardless of anything that they have to say to me. But, I mean, clearly, I mean, Dragon Con has given me the mantle to do the chapel. Right. They know me. They understand. And, you know, I'll have a clear message, you know, that will be Bible-centric. I mean, there's no apology. It's going to be a Christian message, and I won't apologize for that. But
do you think, let me ask you, do you think Superman would be in favor of Plant Vogel? I don't think he would be.
You know, I wonder if there are some characters. I think there probably are some characters over there that would like Plant Vogel and probably some that wouldn't. I don't know, Mayor?
Superman loves solar energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, I do like solar energy.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's wrap up as this gets out of hand. Clarkson Mayor Ted Terry, PSC Commissioner, Minister Tim Echols, Annie Echols, thank you all for coming in and taking the time. Fascinating conversation. At the end of the day, everyone should just enjoy the convention and do them.
Yeah, I'm going to take my electric car and drive right over there right now and get my credentials, and we'll have a good time over there this evening.
You all have a good time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for WABE comes from Emory's Goisweta Business School. The top-ranked MBA in Atlanta offers evening, weekend, and modular MBA formats for working professionals. Learn more at emory.biz/NPR.
Are you tired of that car that won't start? Why not donate it to WABE and support the programs that you enjoy? Learn more about WABE's vehicle donation program at wabe.org/cars or call 1-866-901-WABE. And thanks.
Did you miss today's show? I got you. You can catch up on all the interviews you missed at wabe.org/closerlook. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at WABE Rose Scott or send an email to rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
My name is Emily Tomlinson, and I am from Vine City. I studied drawing and painting at Georgia State University. I really like living in Vine City because it's really close to public transportation, as well as Georgia State, where I take classes. The growth of gentrification in the area. It's taking a lot of people out of the city, where a lot of their family is from. With the dome and everything. It's very authentic Atlanta. It's I think, one of the oldest neighborhoods in Atlanta, and it brings a lot of diversity to the city.
On the next Fresh Air, we wrap up our 30th anniversary retrospective collecting interviews from the first couple of years of our show. We'll hear John Waters, recorded after he made the film Hairspray, and hear from Divine, the man who often played Waters' leading lady and co-starred in Hairspray. And we have an interview with Joey Ramone, who was the lead singer of the Ramones. Join us this afternoon at 2 on 90.1 WABE.
Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm a very sad Rose Scott because it's the season finale of our summer indie music series. We wrap this year's series up with the local band Trash Panda. The indie band has been performing in local venues all around the city this summer, and they recently released a rock anthem dedicated to the women of the city. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Joining me right now in the studio, Trash Panda members Patrick Taylor, Mitch Stanfield, and Max Hewitt. Fellas, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, you guys said that in unison. That's pretty cool. Let's just begin with the obvious. Trash Panda. So, what beverage were you drinking when you came up with the name? I'm just kidding. How'd that come about?
There's some raccoons that come in our back porch and eat our cat's food. So a raccoon is a trash panda, basically, because it has the little raccoon eyes and likes to dig through trash. So that's where we got the name from.
It's an internet sensation, yeah. Reddit imager.
Mm-hmm. It's like a whole subreddit dedicated to just trash pandas.
Yeah.
So. You all, you've been playing together for a little over a year, is that right?
Yeah, 2 years.
How'd y'all meet?
Initially, I've actually known Max the longest, but he and I didn't see each other for a while, and I met Mitch through Craigslist. I needed a place to live.
Yep. Isn't that how it always happens,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, that's how it happens, like, life. That's also why I identify with Trash Pandas. We're just scrambling through life, trying to make it by.
Just rumbling through trash, trying to make it.
So I was rumbling through the trash on Craigslist, and I found Mitch, and we found a cool place to live, and for a year, we didn't make any music.
And then
after a year, we started making some music together, and saw Max again at a party, and we all linked up.
What's the, I love to ask artists this because I think it's important that they define their music. So how do you describe your music?
It's hard to. Mm-hmm. Constantly evolving. We're still young in our music making, and so our influences are varied.
Like? Yeah, but I'd say rock, funk, blues.
I mean, we pull a lot from, like, psychedelic rock, like Tame Impala, but we pull a lot from funky stuff. We pull from
like
George
Parliament.
Clinton. Yeah, Parliament. Check it out.
Yeah.
We pull a lot from the Beatles. I mean, you know, Pink Floyd, classic stuff, whatever.
What's the process like when you all are working on a song? First of all, who is the songwriter?
Well, we all are, I think. Yeah. He mostly comes up with lyrics and
stuff. He being?
The top lines, Patrick.
Patrick, okay.
Yeah. And then we all jam it for a little while, and then we figure out the parts and melodies, and then we kind of just record it.
We record at home, so all of it comes together.
Because you're all our housemates as well.
Yeah. We are.
After you've laid down the tracks, and do you all have like a listening session, and you go, no, I don't really like how that groove is, or, you know, Mitch, I need for you to do something a little different. What's that process like?
Yeah, it's interesting being self-produced in that way because we don't have someone overseeing our process, and we don't have someone to tell us what's not good. So we have to tell each other what's not good. And mm-hmm. That brings us close and creates friction that produces some good stuff.
How do you deal with the friction?
Communication. I mean, you know.
I thought you were going to say like you have a.
We just fist fight.
Yeah.
You know,
it's Fight Club. Yeah. Fight Club.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, we all respect each other. I think that's like the big thing. You know, like I'm lucky. Like I get to work with these two awesome dudes. They're both great musicians and I think, like, I'd be cool with either one of them being like, oh, man, that sucked.
And you were a music instructor. Did you want to be in a band?
Yeah, yeah. I've been in bands since I was, like, I don't know, 11.
Buttons and Mindy, shout out.
What was the name of the group?
Buttons and Mindy.
Buttons and, it's like cats. Buttons and Mindy.
It is. Yeah, it was like an old Warner Brothers cartoon thing.
You know, the purpose of this whole series that we talk to artists who are independent artists, and we ask them the same question. Hey, if a major record label came knocking on your door, would you take it? But you also may have to sacrifice giving up your creative process.
If that's the condition, then no. But there are several conditions under which we would sign, yeah.
Yeah. It all depends. In this day and age, you don't have to have a label. I mean, you know, Chance the Rapper made it with no label. Why can't we?
That is true.
Yeah.
But it's different than it was. You know, you mentioned Parliament Funkadelic, and back in the day where you had to get a record deal, and
right.
you had to get your song on the radio for airplay. Now you can just release it at midnight and, you know, sell a million copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for us, Spotify broke us, and we're thankful
really?
To them for that. I mean, we released a record with no promo.
This summer, you all released a new song called Atlanta Girls. I want to take a listen to some of that. This is an ode to the young ladies of Atlanta.
It is. It is.
Why did you write about us? I'm assuming I'm a part of that.
Well,
yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes, I wrote this for Rose Scott.
Yes, this song is for Rose Scott. You know, for us, writing this song, well, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. We wanted us to write a song. Most of our music is really deeply introspective, and
I've never heard that from an artist.
Yeah, right. And so, and a lot of it's about like mental health, and we're like, let's not write a song about mental health. Let's write a song about real experience, real experiences we've had, and that shouts out the city we love, and that gives glory to women.
In a respectful manner too.
Yeah, that's what we wanted. Yeah. We wanted it to be that. Yeah.
And the video, which I love, was.
Thanks. Yeah. That was
somewhat respectful.
Yeah.
It's for the most part.
It's good times.
You're all going to perform another song for us here live. Mm-hmm. What is it? And tell me the inspiration behind it.
So this song is called, the song we're about to play is called Off.
Mm-hmm.
This song was inspired. It's a really long story. I'm not going to tell that. But I had.
Was there a young woman involved?
No, not so much, actually. I had a brain surgery 7 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And that created a kind of cavalcade of mental health issues, which kind of culminated in 2015 when I was put on medication for seizures, which caused me to dissociate. Mm-hmm. And this song is kind of about that experience.
Wow.
So it was one of the worst summers ever. And the song's.
And you're doing well right now. Mm-hmm. We're glad to hear that.
Thanks.
All right, Trash Panda.
Chalk it up, baby, to a tacit haze. Run me through a grocery of childish phases. Cover up my eyes with greasy hands. Chew and swallow pills straight from Satan's cabinet. Swear to God I've spent a lifetime building habits. Swallow down the hard stuff before it's chewed. I've been down before, but I'm never so down. It's when I get down with you, yeah. Oh, oh. I've been off before, but I'm never so off. It's when I get off with you. Spiral down lower into plastic hellfire. Shoot me up with promises of equal word power. Cover up my mouth with greasy hands. Pacify the urge to seek out happy countries. Let go of the ledge and fall down where the void bleeds. Let me inside your haunted dreams. I've been down before, but I'm never so down. It's when I get down with you. I've been off before, but I'm
never so off when I get off with you. When I get down with you, I've been off before, but I'm never so off. So when I get off with you,
like for y'all to move in with me and play every time.
All right, it's done, Rose. It's done.
Patrick on guitar, Mitch on drums, Max on bass. You all are good, man.
Thanks, Rose. That's a real honor.
I don't know what that means. But no, it's hard to believe that you've only been together for just a little over a year.
Just a little, yeah.
You have an EP coming out soon.
We've got an EP out, and we've got a new album coming soon.
A new album. Mm-hmm. What's the... Often artists say that the album, there's themes, you know, there's a theme. Yeah. We've been talking about themes all day with Dragon Con. Is there a theme to your new project?
Mm-hmm. Galactic.
Yeah. Perfect. Who knew?
Yeah. No one knows this yet. It's called the Star Climber LP. It's coming soon.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of different things going.
You all want to be together, obviously, because you're Trash Panda, but do you want to stay together? You guys want to see what this leads to?
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're banking a lot on this right now.
Yeah,
we're all in.
All the cards are on the table right now, so.
Yeah.
Definitely. All the cards on the table.
Yeah.
And you sell cars.
Yep, I sure do. Not for long, though.
So you want to turn this into a full-time gig?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
what we all want to do, though. Yeah. We want to get paid to make music. That's the goal.
As we wrap up, you all can play another song.
Great. We'd love to.
I'm not going to read some credits. When we get to the credits, I just want y'all to play. This is great. It's our finale.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah. Take it away, fellas.
All right.
Let's go.
Trash Panda legit.
Trash Panda. That's your social media Twitter account.
That's it.
I like...
Break me down, make me frown, hold the fire to my crown, I stay low. No one's home, I'm alone, I've got sorrow in my bones, I stay low. Headed out to the bars, like I'm stepping out on Mars, say hello. All my friends, not again. I can't rest in my own skin, I stay low. If you ride the rising tide, can make you wanna say goodbye. They say don't. Stay low. We hit the sack, she rubs my back, but girl, my mental health is slack. I stay low. If you ride the rising tide, can make you wanna say goodbye. They say don't. Thank you.
y'all just keep playing. That's it for today's show. Closer Look is produced by Candace Wheeler, Ebony Lemon, and Finley Fox. And special thanks to Amelia Brock and Andrew Howard. Our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Executive producer Christine Dempsey. Special thanks to the entire WAB News team, as well as our digital services crew. Head over to the website, wabe.org/closerlook. You can catch Closer Look weeknights at 9 p.m. We're back this Sunday at 1. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. Trash Panda, y'all.